Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramer Arga. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to save you a little money. My job, not just entertain, but put days like today in context because I know how hard they are. Call me. 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me, Jim Cramer. Look, we're taught always to look forward because bringing up the past is supposed to be worthless. That's the first lesson in business wherever you go. And you know what? It's wrong. Sometimes the past is so crazy, so nuts that it distorts everything. And that's what's happened with COVID, which disrupted so many things to the point where it's still with us, even though the pandemic ended more than 2 years ago. It's just not acknowledged enough as a factor still. And I got to start changing that so we can start making some money because of it. Oh, sure, the markets were humming for most of the day until oil broke to the upside despite ample supply, causing people to believe that something terrible must be lurking in the Middle East. Bonds rallied, rates fell. That's called a flight to quality ahead of what many traders think will be a widening of both the Ukraine and the East wars. Then Fed official Neil Kashkari spoke up, don't they all, and said maybe we don't need any rate cuts. Perfect. Thanks, pal. Can't you just let Jay Powell do the talking? Wouldn't that help? But the 1-2 punch knocked the Dow off 530 points. S&P plunged 1.23%. NASDAQ plummeted 1.40%. We've been saying that this market's overbought. It's finally no longer. But the action's not good. See, the nasty, albeit ephemeral, daily action does control our thinking. But the deeper text of this market, the context, often revolves around the last war of COVID and how hard it is to figure out which habits are dead and which ones are still around. Take tonight, where we're going to be speaking to ConAgra. See, this was the number one performer in the S&P 500. This is why I'm talking about this stuff. The number one in a bad day, the packaged food company ConAgra dominates the frozen food aisle. Before the pandemic, ConAgra's frozen healthy choice bowls were crushing it. Millennials, Gen Z, singles, they thronged these fast and inexpensive dishes, making ConAgra one of the hottest stocks in the group. But then came the pandemic. When COVID struck, it drove up prices for pretty much everything, right? At the supermarket, how much you saw, how much it cost, especially things that had to be packaged or transported in a special way, like frozen foods. Next thing you know, because of the pandemic, ConAgra needs to raise the price of its products to you by 30%. You go from having a cheap product that's loved 7 days a week to a relatively expensive product that's liked only 5 days a week. And the other 2 days, you cook from scratch. You make burgers, chicken, whatever. You save some money. But that was then, and suddenly this is now. As Sean Connolly, the ConAgra CEO, will explain to us later tonight, the Healthy Choice consumer has now gotten sick of cooking. More important, sick of cleaning. So they're now buying Healthy Choice meals 7 days a week. Yep, this frozen food aisle is buzzing again. And almost nobody save ConAgra saw it coming. Given the profile of so much of ConAgra's product line, I bet this won't just be a one-quarter phenomenon. If anything, it's the first quarter where the consumer's back, the first one where the collective cooking and cleaning got the people, and they're in now at last buying ConAgra goods like the old days when the stock was much higher. I think it's going to stay this way for some time. If you don't follow the history of the pandemic, you miss stocks like ConAgra, again, the number one performer on a really ugly day. I bring this up because we can't afford to take these COVID-related changes for granted. For example, here's two companies that have been crushed by this, United Health Group and Humana. They were terrific stocks for ages, but now they are just being obliterated. What's wrong? first, there were millions, I mean millions of people who put off non-urgent surgery until COVID died down and they felt safe going to the hospital. That allowed the health insurers to make out like bandits during the pandemic, but when they didn't have to pay for this stuff. But now, and of course they got your premiums, but now people are finally getting these procedures, and it's causing shortfalls everywhere. Shortfall after shortfall for UNH and Humana. Then to add insult to injury, the managed care companies try to recoup some of these new expenses by raising prices for Medicare Advantage policies. They need to get government approval to do that, though, because it really impacts retirees. This time, they didn't get approval. The requests for larger increases were denied. So the stocks got hit again.
Sell, 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 sell.
See, that's all about COVID. And again, almost no one saw it coming. Because even though they should have been pretty obvious, that's how the stocks of United Health and Humana, again, huge favorites of this market for so long, are now down 13.5% and 32% respectively this year alone. How about the stock of Disney? David Faber interviewed CEO Bob Iger this morning after his win in the proxy fight with Trian, the investment vehicle for Nelson Peltz. Midway through the interview, Bob talked about his predecessor. No need to name him, since nobody at Disney seems to be willing to. Oh, okay, I'll do it anyway, Bob Chapek. And how he was running the company during the worst possible moment, where theme parks were empty and movie theaters were closed. The stock took it on the chin, of course, and didn't really recover until the last few months. I think we misjudge how much Disney was really hurt, first by COVID and then by management's response to COVID. Frantic attempts to meet their streaming goals, not backed up by what had been the company's regular cash flow. Now there's no excuse, which is a big reason why Nelson Peltz thought it was worth going after some board seats. But things got better as Peltz agitated while the pandemic faded and the travel tailwinds reemerged. I don't think Peltz saw the turnaround in the stock coming, even as he arguably caused a lot of it, which ironically then hurt his chances of joining the board. Now, have you noticed, for instance, that the cruise line stocks have been among the best performers for the last 18 months, especially Royal Caribbean? Seems quizzical, but wait a second. This move is almost entirely a function of COVID and its after effects. First, cruise ships were all at the epicenter of the pandemic, and the publicity was horrendous. When short sellers bet against these stocks, they thought they were shooting fish in a barrel. If you go back and look at the bottom of the COVID bear market, you'll see some onerous refinancings for Carnival, representing real bankruptcy risk. At the same time, the cruise CEOs were telling you not to worry as the months wore on. Because customers always come back to cruising. Too great a bargain for them to ignore. Oh, the hedge funds didn't believe that, though. They shorted the cruise line stocks endlessly and mercilessly. But it turned out that the CEOs were right. The customers did come back. And then the shorts were overrun. So what happens? Royal Caribbean goes from $37 when the pandemic truly began ebb near the end of 2022 to $135 now. That's the short sellers covering because of the broken COVID trade. Many people who tried to game habits lost fortunes. They thought there was no way Peloton was going to lose all those subscribers, right? Oops, wrong. Who knows if this one will ever come back?
They know nothing!
Williams-Sonoma had been the place during the pandemic to buy outdoor furniture. Remember, we used to go outside because we were afraid of giving it to each other? Or goods to handle the home office because we had to do that because we weren't going to the office anymore. Oh, then we got all the outdoor furniture we needed and we went back to work. Next thing you know, the stock gets cut in half. Then, crazily, we needed new stuff again. We went back to Williams-Sonoma, this time helped by some new seasonal hits because Laura Albert's so good. She's the CEO. And then the stock doubles right back. And then it almost triples. The worst post-COVID hangar is personal computers. First, the work-from-home era became the dominant narrative. Then the world went back to normal, and people shorted Dell or HP like crazy. No letup. But then finally, Dell turned out to have a tie-in with generative AI. It was NVIDIA's preferred partner to connect companies to NVIDIA's supercomputers. Remember, NVIDIA, that stock gets hurt every day. Next thing you know, there's a short squeeze in the stock of Dell, although HP, without a huge NVIDIA tie-in, kind of does nothing. We still can't get our arms around who's coming back to work and who isn't. Do we need that commercial real estate or not? Again, that's post-COVID lack of knowledge. So many stocks are controlled by their past, and right now their past are still controlled by COVID. Sure, right now we're in the grips of higher oil and what that means for inflation. But the bottom line, I got to tell you, if you want to understand this economy, it's all about knowing what happened in the past and then looking for ways to extrapolate it to the future. The pandemic may be over, but we are just now finding out how our habits have changed, some permanently and some in retrospect, not at all. Robert in New York, Robert!
Jim! Jim, I have my Kramer ringtones on my phone to remind me how much money you made me and how much money you saved me.
Oh, man, you're a good guy.
But Jim, I loved it. You saved me. You gave us this whole scenario to take some money off the table. Again, you did it for me, and you've done it for me multiple times.
You know, thank you. I got to tell you, you know, you do it. Like, I'm watching with Jeff Marks, watching Marco down. I said, Jeff, I did say repeatedly, take money off the table. It always hurts. But we got it right. And Robert, I'm so glad you pointed it out because, like, it does get me down a little, but you just reinvigorated myself and made me feel like I am ready for your question so I can hit it out of the park. Let me help you.
Jim, you reinvigorate me because I look at my portfolio and on the downclines, it never goes down because I listen to you.
Right, it probably goes down a little. I want to just go down less, but thank you. You're a good man. How can I help?
Okay, Jim, let's talk about a stock that's up 11% in 1 month. The stock could hit a $500 billion market cap this year. And the energy sector has been on a tear, crushing the S&P against last month, okay? Not to mention they're getting into the alternative energy space. And with oil at up above $80 a barrel, this is a dream for this company. They posted sales and earnings nearly 10-year highs, a 13.1 operating margin, and $33.5 billion in free cash flow, and they returned $32.4 billion to shareholders. ExxonMobil.
You know, it's funny, Robert. I saw the stock up on a bad day, even though they admitted last night that they missed the numbers pretty big. What does that tell you about what can happen here? Now, it is at a high. We don't buy at a high. We wait for a 3 to 5 to 7% pullback. We buy at those levels. But you are a winner, and you've recommended a winner, and I thank you for your kind thoughts because, yes, we told people to lighten up. You remembered. Thank you. You want to get a handle on this economy, then you need to understand what happened during the pandemic and how that's impacting companies right now. Even though we've all forgotten the pandemic, we got to bring it back, if only just to remember in our minds what to do. Mad Money tonight. Conagra turned a solid quarter this morning. We sent the stock higher. So what can we glean about the state of the consumer spending from the packaged food giant report after the pandemic? I'm digging the numbers of the CEO. Then last night I covered how I think small caps could be due from a move higher. Tonight I'm going to take a closer look at some small cap industrials and share the names with you, even though I know most of them went down today. We can't turn off our minds because the market went down. And late last year, I shared my power rankings in the media space, and 5 months later, well, the rankings have held up pretty well. But now that the Disney proxy battle is over, and we've been talking to members of the investing club about that, what do we do here? Do we update the rankings? Of course we do. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Even on a Dow down 530 day, there are still stocks in the green. Take Conagra. This morning, we got a strong set of numbers from ConAgra, CAG, as I call it, the packaged food powerhouse behind Bird's Eye, Marie Callender's, Healthy Choice, Slim Jim, Orville Redenbacher's, Hebrew National, and so many other brands. The last time ConAgra reported, the numbers were, let's say, less than ideal. This time, though, the company posted a 4-cent earnings beat off a 65-cent basis with inline sales, and management reaffirmed their full-year sales and earnings per share forecast and suddenly raised their operating margin guidance, which is really bullish. Looking under the surface, ConAgra's volume was still down year over year, but management said it's already improving on a sequential basis, which is what I care about. If you were worried that ConAgra can't produce decent numbers without raising price, something that's hard to do now that consumers are pushing back, this quarter is pretty encouraging. Now, why did the stock jump more than 5% today in a very poor day for the market? So is this just the beginning, as I think? Let's check in with Sean Connolly. He's the president and CEO of ConAgra Brands. Get a better sense of the quarter. What comes next? Mr. Connolly, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, I'm happy to have you on, Sean, because your stock was the best performing stock in the S&P 500. And it wasn't happenstance. I see a major turn here because we finally got over COVID hangover. We finally got over the giant price increases that you were forced to put through, not that you wanted to, but forced through it. And to me, it seems now you're back on a firm growth path.
Well, we're making progress for sure. The quarter unfolded largely the way we expected. Our supply chain did a terrific job generating cost savings, and that gave us the ability to invest in our business to drive volume, particularly in advertising, innovation, and merchandising. And we were pleased to report a quarter that saw continued volume progress, but importantly, while maintaining our gross margins, we also put up some very strong free cash flow conversion at 124%, which enabled us to continue our debt reduction efforts and keep that on track. So overall, a very solid quarter.
So, Sean, one of the things that happened during COVID was that things got a little too expensive for some people. And so they started, cooking from scratch. Now they're back to some of their favorites, including Healthy Choice. And singles really love those, too, because it's not that much fun to cook and clean.
No question. Well, the amount of input cost inflation we saw in a 2-year period was unlike anything I've seen in my 30 plus years of doing this. And of course, that leads to higher prices in the marketplace. And the consumer obviously became stretched. They turned to problem solving techniques, including more scratch cooking. But when we talk to consumers, interestingly, a lot of them tell us, we don't like planning for meals, we don't like preparing meals, and we certainly don't like cleanup after meals. That's why frozen single-serve meals, as an example, is such a big category. So we invested again this quarter to nudge consumers back to their typical routines, and we saw continued progress, and I expect more from here.
And how about we include, in terms of progress, some of these positive share gains that I saw that ConAgra had this quarter?
Yeah, our two growth priority areas at ConAgra are snacks and frozen. And we saw shares that were stable to up in about 59% of those two consumer domains, which is very strong in our peer set. And that's in part because of the great innovation we've got in the marketplace, but also the support we put against the brands in merchandising and advertising and sampling and things like that. So share gains are important to us, in particular, our large frozen single-serve meal business, where our market shares are over 51%, was up another 1.7 points, which is outstanding and really leading the category.
I want to go back over something you said. You'll say leading innovation. I think people say, well, what? We happen to have some of your products in front. What's innovating there? Well, how about the fact that when the younger people in the office, I have to admit it's not me, show me Dolly Parton videos, which are directly related to ConAgra products, I say something's going on that could be meaningful for your bottom line.
Well, Dolly is a near friend to the ConAgra family, and we started working with Dolly along with Duncan Hines in our baking mix category, and now we're extending into the frozen space. And the amazing thing about Dolly is everybody loves Dolly. It doesn't matter what generation you are, everybody loves Dolly. She is an American icon, and she's a great partner for us at ConAgra. And that's an important part of how we innovate. But I've got another one for you, Jim, in terms of innovation. The fastest growing sport in America is pickleball. And I'm pleased to tell you that this year we've got a really cool innovation coming out from our great Vlasic pickle brand, and it's called Vlasic Pickle Balls. It's tangy, it's dill, it's delicious, and it's crunchy. I'll send you some so you can experience them for yourself.
Well, please do. I happen to like the puddings that you sent. How's the pudding doing?
Excellent. You know, our innovation is going well. I know you like Angie's Boom Chicka Pop popcorn. We've got some great new varieties coming out there as well because people are looking to snack. It's a little bit healthier snacking, But we've got products that meet those needs as well.
No, the Boom Chicken is indeed the household staple. And I saw that you have a tie-in with Cinnabon. Now, how do you reason that people will like those two? How do you like get together and say, you know what, the taste works for a lot of people?
Well, we draw a lot of our inspiration for innovation from both away from home restaurants, as well as social media, TikTok, Instagram, et cetera. You don't have to look very far to get creative ideas these days. So we have a whole demand science group that studies consumer trends everywhere. And then we don't have to invent anything. We'll just copy it. We'll design it into our products and bring it to life in the consumer response.
Now, last thing we have to ask about is the GLP-1. You would be you would see an impact, I know, and you because you do the most data science. So why don't you share us your data science to see whether we should be worried about that on a day when the S&P was down, but your stock was up nicely?
You know, there was a lot of anxiety in our space around the impact of GLP-1 on foods about 3, 4, or 6 months ago. That has diminished a bit. We track it very carefully, and frankly, we've seen no impact. But we have a diverse portfolio, and when I look at GLP-1 users and what they might need to satisfy their dietary needs, it's things like portion control, high protein, the avoidance of sugar, the avoidance of carbs, and also the presence of vegetable nutrition. Well, we can do all of those things with our frozen single-serve meal business. And when it comes to snacks, I can't think of a better snack for a GLP-1 user than a meat stick, because if you're on GLP-1s, you got to protect against muscle loss. And high-protein snacking is the way to go. And between popcorn and meat sticks, we think we've got a solution there as well.
One last thing. I see that David's, in the time since I've known you, David's has become the acceptable snack. I used to think that that was going to be something that was always going to be tiny. But it's become a way that people snack, correct?
David is a big brand for us. We've got another seed brand in Biggs. Between the two, I think we've got about a 60-plus market share of the category. Seeds are incredibly healthy snacks. They're interactive, and they have a great opportunity to deliver flavor with the seasoning techniques that we use. So it's a great business for us. It's not small. It's a big, profitable business.
Well, look, people want yield. People want growth. They want steady, and they want science. I think ConAgra has it. I've been waiting, Sean, because I know one day you would say, Jim, it's here. And now, you're not so bold as to do that. That's actually my job. But I like everything you had to say, and I'm really glad you came on the show, Sean. It's great to see you.
Good to see you, Jim.
Okay, guys, yield, some growth, trends going with it. Sean Connolly, ConAgra Brands President and CEO. You don't get to be up on a down day like this unless you've got something real good to talk about. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, go small or go home? Part two of our stroll through the small cap landscape is next. Go big and stick with Cramer.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
Last night I told you the small cap cohort could finally be due for a nice bounce, in large part because these smaller companies are more hostage to interest rates, and I expect rates, even after this recent spike, to only go lower this year. Plus, their stocks tend to be much cheaper than the big caps. I know the market was terrible today, and oil soared, but that can't paralyze you and cause you to stop cogitating on good ideas. Now, I want to go sector by sector, searching for the best small cap opportunities. And tonight, we're going to start with the industrials. That is the sector with the heaviest weighting in the Russell 2000. It accounts for 19% of the benchmark small cap index. To look for opportunities here, first I like to run a screen. That's time honored for me. This time we only focused on companies that are smaller than $5 billion that are still large enough to mention on air, with positive earnings estimates for this year and stocks that traded at a discount to the S&P 500. These are the parameters. Out of the 274 industrial stocks in the Russell 2000, that screen left us with 121 stocks. From there, the process is a lot more subjective. Go through the list and pick out 10 stocks that I know and like the most. Hey, that's okay. I mean, use my institutional knowledge. First up is Terex, which makes cranes and material handling equipment. Now, you've gotten some good buying opportunities in Terex over the past couple of years whenever investors get spooked about non-residential construction market, because the only problem area in the space are office buildings. And even there, the widespread concerns, I think, are overblown. Trust me, there's plenty of building going on, from infrastructure to data centers to new manufacturing facilities to the massive unmet need for new power plants. That means there's plenty of demand for Terex's equipment. So every time this stock pulls back on non-residential construction worries, it's always been able to snap right back. Terex is up nearly 82% for the past few years, trouncing the almost 13% in the S&P 500 for the same period. In recent months, the stock's been hit with a few downgrades, mostly buy-to-hold calls, and that's based on valuation. But man, Terex still trades at less than 10 times this year's earnings estimates. Sure doesn't look all that overvalued to me, especially, by the way, versus Caterpillar. Next is Dycom Industries. That's an engineering construction E&C company, best known for building telecommunications infrastructure. In late 2022, I recommended this one as part of a homework segment when it was around $90. I think it would be a benefit for the big beneficiary of the big infrastructure bill with its billions upon billions of dollars for rural broadband. Unfortunately, let's call ourselves early. The stock floundered for about a year afterwards, thanks to worries about a capital spending slowdown from the telco carriers. These fears have now passed, though, and the federal dollars are finally coming through. Dycom stock caught fire about 6 months ago, and now it shot up to just under 140 today. So I would say stick with it. See this example. Okay, so it got hammered today, all right? Everything got hammered today. Let's just take this off the tape and imagine about trying to capture this, not trying to miss that. When looking through the small cap industrials, I saw a bunch of strong transportation plays like ArcBest. That's a trucking company that's focused on what's known as the less than truckload or LTL space. Now, I didn't know this one all that well until CEO Judy McReynolds came on the show nearly 2 years ago. I was impressed. I've been impressed with the stock ever since. It has effectively doubled during this period, despite constant worries about a freight recession. If ArcBest can perform that well when the trucking business is bad, imagine what will happen when they get their act together. I think trucking is coming back. Fourth is Hillenbrand, which makes highly engineered mission-critical processing equipment for a bunch of end markets like durable plastics, food, and recycling. That's a big change. This company used to make mainly caskets. But thanks to a series of acquisitions, it's much more diversified. Well, this stock's been trading sideways for roughly 3 years. I think Hillenbrand can break out to the upside now that it's got its house in order. By the way, look at this. Classic reverse head and shoulders. Our fifth small-cap industrial is Sterling Infrastructure, Texas-based engineering construction firm, one that pivoted to building data centers and e-commerce fulfillment centers a few years ago. Smart. When I covered this one in August of last year as a homework item, I told you that Sterling had a great story, but that the stock was too hot, so you should wait for a pullback. And that's exactly what you got, with the stock tumbling from $80 at the time to the low 60s by late November. I sure hope you passed those levels, though, because now it's set to rebound at 105, in large part because the company reported a blowout quarter with phenomenal guidance back in February. While Sterling's on the expensive side for the small-cap industrial trading at 21 times this year's earnings estimates, the numbers here are so good, might be worth paying up for. Six, one I haven't talked about in, very long time, John Bean Technologies, which makes very specialized equipment for the food and aerospace industries, including many of those funky vehicles you see on the tarmac in any given airport. 2023 was a down year for John Bean, and the stock swooned since last summer. But the company just issued a much better than expected forecast for 2024 when it reported in February, so I wouldn't be surprised if the stock makes a nice comeback this year. Seventh, let's not forget about MasterBrand, the cabinet maker that was spun out of Fortune Brands in late 2022. MasterBrand just came on the show less than 2 weeks ago, so I won't spend too much time rehashing the story. Just know the company's thrived since its breakup, even outperforming its former parent, which is supposed to be the better business. But even after more than doubling over the past year, this thing only sells for 12 and a half times earnings, so I think you can keep working. Eighth is H&E Equipment Services. I know some of these are kind of out of the realm. But listen, this is a heavy-duty equipment rental company. We've embarked on a new building renaissance in this country, and all of the equipment rental places have thrived. I want you to think of this one as a small United Rentals. Next up is Trinity Industries. Now, remember we had CSX on last night? That railroad's booming. So is Union Pacific. So is Norfolk Southern doing very well. The railroad car maker that is Trinity also handles maintenance and related services like we saw yesterday. This is another potential winner from recovery in the freight market. Plus, I think anything connected to the rails benefits from the rise of onshoring and nearshoring as companies move their manufacturing closer to home in order to maintain stable supply chains. We saw what happens during COVID when we don't. When it comes to rail cars, we got a couple of options here. We could have gone with Greenbrier. That's been hot as a pistol. But Trinity's got the better dividend, 4.1% yield. I think that gives you a nice cushion. And in this market, don't we need nice cushions? Finally, we need a bit more aerospace exposure from this basket of small cap industrial. So why don't we go with the company that I used to have a huge position in my old hedge fund 25 years ago, AAR, which is an independent provider of aftermarket parts and services for both commercial aviation and government customers. The aftermarket parts portion of the aerospace market is always a pretty good business. But right now, it's particularly good because of the terrible, horrible, and seemingly endless production qualities at Boeing. I mean, they just have too many problems. An extremely long wait list to buy new planes from their only real competitor, Airbus. If airplanes can't buy new planes, guess what? The airlines need to squeeze more life out of their existing ones. And that's good news for aftermarket players like AAR. I am actually quite surprised that this one's come down. When we were doing the research on this, I said, wow. This one stood up and said, how can this be? This is exactly in the wheelhouse of this market. Bottom line, that's our first batch of small cap names that look enticing right here, all from the industrial sector. Tune back in tomorrow and I'll give you 10 more small cap. That's right, 10 small caps in the healthcare space. Probably do better in a recession. And then we'll keep going group by group next week because we are fascinated by this small cap stock market. I want to go to Paul in Pennsylvania. Paul.
Hey, Jim. Second time caller, long time disciple.
Excellent.
I love your show. I love your sound box. I got two questions for you.
Okay.
My first question is about the Fed. What is the market's obsession with what the Fed does? And you got these Fed guys coming out every other day saying different things. There's not going to be any cuts or are going to be cuts. And I just wonder, are companies really that dependent on what the Fed is going to do? And my second question is, I saw your bid on AZEK. I've been holding it a little bit. I'm wondering if I should switch into Trex or
No. Jesse Singh's doing an unbelievable job at AZEK. I want you to stay long AZEK and buy more if it goes lower. I think you're absolutely right. There's an obsession with the Fed, and I wish it weren't the case. Why? Because we have Jay Powell. He's the Fed chief. He's really the only guy who matters, and we should just pay attention to him once a month. I think that this whole idea of trying to read the tea leaves of the Fed has kept people out of this market for a very long time. I have written and railed about this forever. The people who are obsessed about the Fed are the people who don't make any money. I think it's my job to help you make money, not do nothing. Sorry, that's how I see it, and I'm sticking by it. Joseph in New York. Joseph.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if Kramer could make come out of it into. I own some shares in Procter & Gamble.
Okay.
I wonder if he could just look into it and is a speaker tonight.
Hey, Joseph, listen, Procter & Gamble's terrific. We bought some yesterday. We sold some Procter when it burst in the 160s, and now we're trying to rebuild the position. We bought some yesterday, and I'm looking to buy more. Why? Because Procter & Gamble is what you buy. It's a steady Eddie company. Whenever it's had a break, I've always reached for it, and it's been right to reach for it. Now, if you're looking for some small-cap industrials to add to your portfolio, then look no further than this list that I just gave you and many more names that are coming. And then after that, we will refresh it and refer to these stocks over and over because I like this section of the market. Now, we got much more Mad Money. From Disney to Paramount, there have been a lot of developments this week in the media space. So I'm updating my media power rankings and sharing where I come down after the influx of headlines. Then you know my stance when it comes to Apple, right? Own it, don't trade it. But the Queen of Fibs has a big call in the name. Could the stock be showing signs of a bottom? I'm consulting the technicals in a special edition of Off the Charts on a really crazy day. And, of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. Five months ago, we laid out our major media power rankings. The list went Disney, then Fox, then Warner Brothers Discovery, and finally Paramount Global, in that order. Since then, I've got to say, that ranking list held up pretty well. Disney's been far and away the best performer, finally doing something for my charitable trust, with the stock up nearly 33%, although down badly today after a brutal intraday reversal. Fox came in second, up more than 3%, while I was right to highlight Warner Brothers and Paramount as the laggards in the group. I did get the order wrong. Warner was a much worse performer, down more than 16%. Yep, but maybe it's time for a shakeup in the media power rankings, because it's sure been a busy week in this industry. The proxy fight at Disney came to an end yesterday, with Disney fending off legendary activist investor Nelson Peltz's bid for two board seats. There's also a lot of activity with Paramount, which has been engaged in complex takeover talks for weeks now. Plus, we've gotten fourth quarter earnings for each of these at this point, and some of these stocks had very big moves, which is why this is a good moment to reassess. Why don't we start like this? Let's start with the returning champion, Disney, the clear outperformer. The problem with Disney is that its stock has roared in large part thanks to the proxy fight. The board of directors knew they had to get their act together, right, to fend off Peltz. But now they've succeeded, it might be a problem. I know I wish he'd gotten those board seats, because he's very good at helping companies create value, even if that's regarded as a controversial ride post, despite his good work at Procter & Gamble. Disney's made some major commitments to cut costs and set up a succession plan for CEO Bob Iger. Will they stick to those commitments now that Peltz doesn't have a gun to their head? That's the question. It was certainly on my mind as I watched David Faber interview Bob Iger in the 9 a.m. hour of Squawk on the Street this morning, and then did my own interview with Nelson Peltz during the 10 a.m. hour. Despite my best efforts, Peltz did not give us a clear answer on whether he's sticking around in the stock after losing the proxy contest. But he did say that if Disney didn't follow through on his commitments, like the $7.5 billion in annual cost cuts, or making more entertaining movies, then he might come back with another proxy contest next year. Look, I consider that a good thing, because it'll keep management on their toes, as there are enough votes among these index funds that will most likely turn against management if they don't follow through. I think management will follow through, though. However, as I said in a special alert to CNBC Investing Club subscribers earlier today, even as we sold some Disney stock Monday, because it had run so much, we wanted to trim even more this morning again when the stock was up nicely. But we couldn't because of our restrictions. Of course, it doesn't mean I'm restricted from telling you not to sell, so I told you to sell. As I wrote in the bulletin, I'm still positive on the stock, but a good bit less than I was 5 months ago when it was, of course, much lower. Next, how about this Fox, which I correctly pegged as the second best of the big four media stocks in November? Well, when Fox reported its latest quarter, the numbers were surprisingly resilient. Nobody expected a great-looking quarter because the company's up against some real difficult comparisons. Hey, they had the World Cup of the year ago quarter. But their sales came in slightly better than expected, and their earnings were magnificent. A 22-cent earnings beat off a 12-cent basis. Outsized. I still see Fox as a good, solid choice, especially because the stock hasn't run too much and has a reasonable valuation. Plus, we're now in an election year where Fox News will likely make out like bandits. You know what's not a good, solid option, though? Sadly, Warner Brothers Discovery. I put this stock in third place 5 months ago, purely out of respect, not fourth place, because of the long-term track record of CEO David Zaslav, and we care about long-term on this show. But it's getting harder to see how he's going to pull this rabbit out of a hat. Remember, all the old-line media companies are up against the same set of challenges here, but Warner needs to navigate these challenges with the worst balance sheet in the industry, by far, actually, and the possibility of some mega-cap competition for their NBA contracts. You know the mega-caps won sports. In short, it's a high-wire act. The company needs to consistently put up strong numbers to outrun its debt maturities and interest payments. Sadly, the most recent quarter did not have strong numbers, with Warner Brothers missing expectations pretty much across the board. Best I can say about this one is that Dune 2 seems like a major success. At this point, however, I can't go positive on the stock until the balance sheet gets much more clean, and you have to respect that. We do balance sheet analysis here, and the balance sheet here is just not good. Finally, let's talk about Paramount Global, which is also an enigma. On the one hand, it's not doing well operationally, and it's the second worst balance sheet in the industry, a close second, actually. On the other hand, Paramount's considered to be in play, meaning somebody might buy the whole shooting match. I think that's the only reason why this stock has held up so much better than Warner Brothers over the past 5 months. But man, for a company that's supposed to be in play, Paramount shares act terribly. These takeover rumors pushed the stock up from $11 in early November to $17 in mid-December. Since then, it's given back almost all of those gains. Because even if there is a deal, we've realized it's going to be very messy and probably not too rewarding for shareholders, at least the common shareholders like you and I. In fact, to understand this point, you only need to look at what happened this week. Yesterday, the stock jumped 15% on news that the company was entering exclusive merger talks with Skydance, a production company controlled by David Ellison, son of billionaire Oracle founder Larry Ellison. Sounds real good, right? Made it sound like a done deal, even better. Overnight, multiple analysts raised the price targets, and one even updated the stock, but then this morning, David Faber broke the story that thanks to the dire state of Paramount's balance sheet, here we go again, the company might need to do an equity raise of up to $3 billion or else no deal. That, my friends, is bad. According to Faber's reporting, Ellison and his partners would likely buy a good amount of any equity raise, but it would still be dilutive to shareholders. The market didn't care for this news, and that's why the stock sunk 8.5% today, giving back most of yesterday's gains. Long story short, even if Paramount gets a takeover bid, it probably won't be a huge windfall for shareholders, as nobody's crazy enough to pay up for this thing right now. People don't like this linear TV. By the way, great work again by my Squawk on the Street colleague, Mr. Faber. Given all this, how have our media power rankings changed? Well, first, I do want to swap Fox for Disney at the top of the rankings, with Disney moving to second because it's already run so much and the Peltz proxy fight is over, again, as I told CNBC Investing Club members. Long term, I still prefer the House of Mouse, but for the rest of 2024, I'm betting on Fox because it still has the election ahead of it. Then at the bottom of the rankings, I'm going to swap Paramount and Warner Bros. Discovery too. Paramount in third, Warner Bros. Got to go dead last. They're both in not great shape. But at least Paramount has takeover chatter. Warner Bros. Doesn't seem to have anything. Bottom line, for the rest, 2024, our new media power rankings go like this. Fox in first, Disney in fairly close second, and then Paramount way, way down in a distant third, only slightly better than worst of breed Warner Brothers Discovery. Mad Money is back after the break.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The lightning round is up next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. It's a wrap for calls. And another city in Mississauga. Bye-bye-bye. So we play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Daddy, time for the lightning round. Clear. It's over. Jeff in North Carolina. Jeff.
Kramer, booyah, Ski Daddy.
Man, I like
Kramer,
your fired up attitude. How can I help?
For 20 years, I've loved you. You've helped me make millions. Tell me, JetNap, what do I do?
I didn't like that last quarter. I didn't like that GitLab quarter. I went over it with a fine-tooth comb. There was nothing there that made me feel terrific about a high multiple stock. Let's go to Joe in Maryland. Joe.
Hello, Jim.
Joe, what's up?
I tell you what, not long ago, I invested in a company that was doing very well. And just before the earnings report came out, I really wrote it up on it. And then it took a dump. So I'd like to know whether to hold it or sell it and move on. And that would be Snapchat.
All right. Snapchat did not have a good quarter. You do not have much luxury here. You got about 3 weeks to make a move. If it bounces here, if you can get it out of 12, 13, that's what I prefer. Probably has a couple points downside from here. Let's go to Leon in Pennsylvania. Leon.
Good evening, Mr. Kramer.
Oh, Leon, how are you?
I'm looking for your opinion on Blackstone, buy, sell, or hold.
We are in a tougher tape than we were. The stock is only down 5 points from its high. I am using that kind of analysis, 6 points. I'm using that kind of analysis to try to figure out where I can make a stand, and the stand is not reached at 126. How about we go to Rob in New York? Rob.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Rob.
I'm in the investing club. Thanks for the picks. It's been a great year.
Excellent. Thank you. What's going on? Yeah, it's been
My friend who's an Eagles fan gave me a tip to buy a stock a couple of years back. It's down 15%. Do I dump it at a loss or hold it for a big jump? The stock is RKT Rocket.
Now, that must be a Detroit Lions fan. An Eagles fan would never steer you that wrong. You do not want to be in that stock. It is time to ka-ching, ka-ching. Yeah, honestly. I mean, and I like Dan Campbell. Let's go to Stefano in New York. Stefano.
Jimmy Kramer, how you doing?
A tough day, but we're just hanging in there, about to go do some cocktails. What's going on?
I am calling about a world that's in peril, a world that needs security. I am calling about ticker symbol PANW.
Oh, my Jeff, I know what you're talking. Talking Palo Alto. Jeff Marks and I were saying, wait a second, we're time to buy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, own it, don't trade it. Kramer tackles Apple when we return.
Everybody knows I'm a big long-term believer in the stock of Apple. But for the last few months, the stock's been a nightmare. So what's it going to take to stem the bleeding? What needs to happen before this thing can bottom? Can't answer that question? We're running a special Thursday off the charts with the help of Carolyn Barone. She's that brilliant technician who runs a trading room at ElliottWaveTrader.net and whose work you can find on X, formerly Twitter, at Queen of Fibs. Because despite all the ugliness, stop trading. She's actually starting to feel more constructive. Yet now that Apple's experienced a substantial pullback from its peak last December, Broden says she's begun to watch the stock closely for signs of potentially important low developing in the near future. In other words, approaching a bottom. Why does she feel this way? Okay, let's start with Apple's weekly chart, which apparently has a lot going for it. Right now, Broden notes that Apple's sitting on top of an important level of support here. See all these levels of support? Remember, she likes to measure past swings in a stock, then run them through the prism of Fibonacci ratios to find the places where that stock is most likely to change trajectory. And on the weekly chart, Apple's got a whole cluster of 8 Fibonacci price relationships running from around 165 to just under 169. Basically, this is what's known as a building floor. She thinks the floor is probably somewhere between the stock's current level and 4 points down from here. I like that. On top of that, Broden's always looking for what we call symmetry, because past moves often end up being similar in size to future moves. Now, if you look at the recent declines in Apple, 5 of them were between roughly 31 and 35. 34, 32, 33, okay, 31. Well, guess what? Hey, this is where the stock should find its footing. While it's a little ridiculous, I know that the stock tends to trade this way, the fact is we've seen this symmetry pattern over and over and over again. That matters because Apple's now down nearly 31 from its highs, and this is around where it should bottom. Right around there. So I've got to give it to you ahead of time, okay? So from a chart perspective, there are a ton of reasons for the stock to bottom in the mid to high 160s. Of course, Broden uses her Fibonacci analysis on the x-axis of the chart, too. Again, looking back at those 5 declines to the low 30s, they typically lasted for 16 weeks. This time, Apple's slide has lasted for 15 weeks. Now, not all of these swings will be equal to others, but the timing factor gives us another reason to suspect that the decline might be coming to an end. Remember, this is Fibonacci work, okay? This has nothing to do with the iPhone. It has nothing to do with with AI. It's Fibonacci work, and it's been unparalleled in being able to call the tops and bottoms of Apple. Now, when you check out Apple's daily chart, Broden thinks, all right, a little less than not as encouraging, okay? Sure, the stock has some key support levels in the 160s once again, but it's still caught in the pattern of lower lows and lower highs. More important, Broden has a very specific buy or sell target. She's always watching the 5-day exponential moving average and the 13-day. So you see the 5 is blue and the 13-day is red. When the 5-day in blue goes above the 13-day in red, that's her favorite sign. Unfortunately, the 13-day, as we see, is, let's say it's still above the 5-day, meaning Apple is not there yet. That has to change direction. But it could get there in the not-too-distant future, and that's why Broden says she's now stalking Apple for a new buy entry point as long as its floor of support in the 160s holds. And if we get that 5- to 13-day exponential moving average crossover, then she'll get even more constructive in the stock. But if those key support levels fail, well, okay, then it's time to throw in the towel. My view, look, you know I always tell you to own Apple, don't trade it. Because trying to trade in and out of this stock has been very hard and very wrong. It's tough to get the timing right, especially if you don't manage money as a full-time job. But if Broden's right, then you might want to buy more Apple into this dreary and seemingly, frankly, endless sell-off. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.